A Dwelling by Nuruddin Farah. It was a dwelling like any other dwelling in the neighbourhood, not in the least different. The number of human beings in the encampment was 10 times less than that of the cattle. It was the dwelling of a certain Jess, a unit of several families living together. It seemed to be unique, and, in a way, it was. Every place has its unique features, and this place had more than one. In the dark, the huts looked more or less like anthills, maybe of an exaggerated size. The huts were made of wattle, weaved into a mat-like thing with a cover on top. They were supported by sticks acting as pillars. Each had one door, all of 4 feet high. It was a portable home, to be put on the humpback of a camel when the time came for moving to a pastoral area farther up or down, to the east or the west. It was the portable hut, unlike the stone house or mud hut in a town. The lives of these people depended upon that of their herds. The lives of the herds also depended upon the plentiness or the scarcity of green grass. But would one be justified in saying that their existence depended upon green pasture, directly or indirectly? Yes, life did depend on green pastures. Ebla was a member of this Jess. She had been on the move with them from the time she was born. Her father and mother had died when she was very young. In fact, she couldn't remember vividly anything about them. She had always been entrusted to the care of her grandfather, who was himself an invalid, though not such a bad one as all that. He always got through to the people and was very much respected, and his word was very much listened to. For a woman, she was very tall, but this was not exceptional here. She stood 6 feet high. She would have been very beautiful had it not been for the disproportion of her body. She could neither read nor write her name. She only knew the surahs, which she read when saying her prayers. She learnt these by heart, hearing them repeated many times by various people. She thought about things and people in her own way, but always respected the old and the dead. Her mother and father meant more to her than anybody else, except her grandfather, who was responsible for her upbringing. Ebla became disappointed with life many times, in people more than a dozen times, but these occasions were not grave. The circumstances were minor, at least in the way she approached them. To her, a refusal did not matter. Neither would a positive answer make her pleased, but acceptance of her opinions, both by her relations and her would-be husbands, did make her pleased. She thought of many things a woman of her background would never think of. Translated, Ebla roughly means graceful, and she always wanted her actions to correspond with her name. Ebla had been toying with the idea of leaving home for quite some time. However, she did not know whether this was to be a temporary change of air in a town or a permanent departure. She loved her grandfather, but maybe she mistook pity for love. Anyway, it was only when she thought of her grandfather that she felt the wringing of her heart and a quick impulse not to leave him. Problems are created by people, Ebla thought, still lying on her mat in the hut. But there is no problem without a solution. Maybe it is good that I should stay to take care of my grandfather, to see to it that he dies peacefully and is buried peacefully. But should I think of someone who does not think of me? It is he who has given my hand to the old man, exchanging me for camels. She let her hand touch the mat on which she had been lying awake the whole night. It was the same mat on which she sat to talk to many of her suitors in the dark. In this same hut, or in another one, maybe in a different area, 20 or 30 miles farther up or down in one direction or another, she sniggered at what some had said to her. She enjoyed talking to others. But none of them was an old man like Jumala, the one to whom fate had handed her over. It was yesterday morning that her grandfather had accepted Jumala's proposal. He was an old man of 48, fit to be her father. Two of his sons had alternately courted her, but only the younger one was very keen on her. Probably he did not propose because his elder brother had not yet got married. At least, that was the hint that he gave, not to Ebla in person, but to friends. Gossip goes around swiftly. Women hear a lot and talk a lot and tell many lies. Ebla did not believe a word of it. Obstinate, they would say. Maybe hammering the word on her had made her that way. Maybe in a way she was obstinate. She closed her eyes and imagined herself in the same bed with Jumala. Horrible. She just could not imagine it without going absolutely berserk. It was madly terrifying. The way things were, nobody seemed to care whether they harmed one another. Everybody for himself. No one gave a damn if something he did was inconvenient to others. One came out of one's mother's womb alone. One tried to solve one's problems alone. One died alone, isolated. One was put in a grave and left behind under the ground. As soon as the corpse had been put in the grave and everyone had headed home to mourn, it was said that the dead heard the sound of people, even the sound which was made by their feet. That is what the prophet and great saints had said. Soft, warm air blew the door to and fro, very comforting. It makes one pleased, she thought, the wind blowing things like that. Actually, what served as the door was a piece of cloth hanging from above the ceiling just to hide those inside. It would be inconvenient to be inside those huts with nothing to hide you. Ebla stood up and dusted her robe, a very big robe wrapped around her body. A piece of it hung on her back to serve as a baby carrier or even as a vessel or a shoulder cover or for countless other purposes. She was very much worried, not for herself, but for her grandfather. She could not dismiss the thought just by shrugging her shoulders. She was not that type. She was a woman, a responsible woman of 18, going on 19. Ordinarily, she was not a weak-minded girl. Not once in her life had she stopped doing anything because it would harm others. But this time, it was different. It was too much for her, far too much. She could not bear to think of waiting to get married to Jumala, to be in the doldrums, or to disappoint everyone, especially her grandfather. If she stayed, she thought, she would always be in low spirits. And if she went, what would happen? Yes, what if she went? Something rang in her mind, but where would she go to, and to whom, and with whom? Next to her, her friend, a girl of her own age, was snoring in her sleep, but she looked absolutely dead. Ebla stood up. Her left arm was asleep. She massaged it with her right hand. The edge of her robe lay underneath her friend's knee. Ebla tried to give it a tug without waking up her friend. At first, she appeared to have woken up. Ebla stopped, motionless for a while. But the friend had put more of Ebla's robe underneath her body. decidedly, and come what may, she thought, she pulled her robe. Thank God, the robe pulled out, and the friend still lay asleep, as if undisturbed. Many hours of the night still remained. Ebla dreaded the long hours ahead of her, awaiting her as if in ambush, an enemy, an unidentified enemy, who fixed his eyes on you when he felt like it. But she walked out into the warm night to think over the situation. She wished she were not a woman, but would being a man make her situation any better, she wondered. But let me sort out my ideas and see what I can do about them, she told herself.